Bibles with me. Let's go to the book of Exodus. Exodus, the second chapter, and I'll just read the second and third verse as kind of our drop. I've really had, over the last several weeks, and I don't know how many more weeks I'll do this, but I've just wanted to go back and enjoy the stories that means a lot to me. Maybe I'm just feeding myself. I hope that it's beneficial to you over this last few weeks as we've dealt with Manasseh and we've dealt with some different characters in the Bible. Some that maybe you've heard of, maybe some that you haven't spent a lot of time hearing about. But they're some of my favorite stories because of the depth of the person, because of the quality. When you go into the story, it just tells so much about their character and who they were. It teaches so much. I grew up most of my life, as I said, I was saved from the time I was 8 years old. So I don't really have a lot of stories about a lot of bad stuff that I did or a lot of horrible things. I mean, I'm not saying I was perfect by no means. I had my moments. But the fact is, I don't have one of those dramatic testimonies like I spoke of last week. And my life was built mostly around either hearing stories about people or watching people's lives and making my decisions and my determinations based on that. Watching someone live a certain way and then seeing if that works or not. And when I saw that that just doesn't pay out, it was easy for me to say, well, I'm not going down that path or I'm not going to take that path. That was the only temptations that I really had to battle when I was growing up, was the temptations to stay firm long enough to watch someone's life actually play out. Whether they were someone who drank a lot or someone who did drugs or someone who partied or someone who drove too fast or whatever it was that they did in their life growing up, that's what I watched. And I would watch them as an older person. I would see them when they're 60 and I would watch people from their character. And I found out that literally what I was living and how I was living was the best life that there was to live. It wasn't just something that I just was weak and I trusted God. It was the fact that I spent a lot of time actually watching people's lives and watching how they finally ended up when they got there. And was it worth the journey? Was it worth all the sacrifice? To be the business entrepreneur, was it worth losing family and losing relationships and losing all of those things to be able to say, I've arrived? And so all of these things became part of my life. And this is a story this morning of someone, and usually they're men, but this is a woman. And her name is Jochebed. Anybody ever heard the story of Jochebed? Probably not. Probably not very many. Most people, if I tell you who is Jochebed, if I asked you to write it on a piece of paper, most in this room wouldn't be able to tell me who Jochebed was. Well, Jochebed was one of the most powerful women, one of the most influential women of the whole Old Testament. Her name is only mentioned twice in the Old Testament, and it's not even anything characterizing her. In fact, most of the time when the Bible describes her, it just calls her a woman. It just says a woman. And when you go to the New Testament and talk about this, it will say a husband and wife, a woman. But Jochebed was an incredible lady. And her story is one of the most powerful stories that teaches me in my life when I was growing up how to release. Look at the person beside you and say, can you release? That's an incredible ability when it comes to following God and trusting God. Do I have the ability to release or to be released or allow God to release things into my life? Now we know in the New Testament, Jesus teaches this continually. He is constantly trying to get people to do this. Look, if you sow sparingly, you will. If you try to save your life, you will. See, I could go on and on throughout Scripture, and you know all of them. There's not any of them that are foreign to you. You know basically the teachings of Jesus. It's about lay down your life, and I will raise it up. I will give you better. Now, in the Old Testament, it's kind of hard. We don't have Jesus stepping out yet, but we have illustrations and stories. We have Job and others in there that we find who are willing to give up their life and not compromise in any way and trust God, and God would deliver them, whether it's the stories of Daniel, the stories of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We have all these stories of men, and what it's trying to teach us in a story is to release yourself unto God and watch God do something that you cannot do yourself. In the New Testament, that's what we hear from Jesus. And in the story of Jochebed, this is one of the most powerful ones that I ever came across. Now, go with me to Exodus 2 and verses 2 and 3. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was good, a goodly child, a fair complexion, he was a beautiful child. He had a glow about him. He just was a beautiful child. She hid him for 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and weeds and made just a basket of pitched it with mud and dabbed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags or in the reeds by the river's edge. It doesn't seem like a whole lot, but let me catch you up a little bit on the story before I tell you who this woman is and how she gets to this point. You remember the story of Joseph. Joseph is going into Egypt and he becomes a great ruler in Egypt. And he invites his whole family. Since he becomes such a powerful man, we remember the story of how he brings his dad, Israel, and brings all his brothers. And Pharaoh loves them so much that he gives them a great piece of land and says, "This is your land." Well, in time, Joseph dies and all the relatives die and Pharaoh passes away. In fact, a couple Pharaohs pass away, and just time passes, and as it does, the Pharaoh that rises starts to think, "Who are these people? I don't know who they are. I don't know who Joseph was. I don't have any connection with him. I only know one thing. They are a great number of people. And they're sticking and they're sitting right beside us. If they decided to go to war with us, they could wipe us out. They're more numerous than we are. They've got better numbers than we do." So Pharaoh began a slow systemization or systemizing of being able to put them into bondage and eventually total slavery. And the whole nation of Israel for almost 400 years is put in this bondage. Generation after generation, all they know is slavery. One thing still is a problem. They still have a lot of kids. Even though they're slaves, they're finding time to have kids. Somehow, some way, they're not too tired. They're making bricks and they're doing all the stuff, but they're popping out kids left and right. Still growing in numbers. Even though some of them are dying by the work that they're doing, they're still multiplying. And so Pharaoh comes up with an idea. He says, "Listen, I'm going to tell all the handmaids," which is the ladies that help deliver the babies, "all the maid servants, I'm going to tell them that, look, when you go in to deliver that child for that Hebrew woman, if it's a girl, let it live. If it's a boy, wrap the cord around its neck and choke it and kill it when you deliver it. And then hand it to the mother and say, it was stillborn. This is what I want you to do." But the Bible says that the handmaids were so terrified of this. They just couldn't come around to doing this that they wouldn't do it. They would say that they were doing it, but really weren't doing it. And guess what was happening? The crowd was getting bigger. So Pharaoh said, "Forget all this. I'm through with trying to be nice." He finally just makes a decree and says, "Listen, I want everybody that has a baby boy to bring him out. We'll pick him up on the wagon." When I was young, they had a movie about this when they talked about Moses. And I always got the illustration in my mind, the mindset of them coming around with this paddy wagon type deal pulled by horses, and they just chunk the baby over up in the back. They carry it down to the River Nile and they just throw it into the water. And this is what Pharaoh's strategy was. Every male that's born, I'll kill. It's not even a question anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. I'm just going to kill it. This is chapter 1 of Exodus. This is what Moses, and this is what Jochebed gets married into. Jochebed marries a good man of the tribe of Levi. But she gets pregnant. When she gets pregnant, she has a baby boy. What do? She's supposed to bring it out. She's supposed to give it to him. But But I want to read some things about Jochebed that a lot of times you don't read. Go with me in your Bibles to Acts, and I want to tell you a little bit about this woman before we jump any further. Acts chapter 7, verse 20 says this about her. In which time Moses was born, and was exceedingly fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. Verse 21, can you pull that up? And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. And notice now, and when he was what? Cast out. Look at the person beside you and say, are you ready to cast out a child? I mean, that wording there is so strong that she had to make a decision. This is how strong this woman is. That she is willing to make a decision that I've done all I can do and now I'm willing to cast him out. I'm willing to just give it up. I'm willing to go a different route than the route that I'm going. Go with me in your Bibles to Hebrews 11 and in verse 23. I want to show you something else about this woman. It's an incredible lady. Not just because she's a woman, but just her mentality toward God. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents. Notice it doesn't mention her name. It doesn't say very much about her. This is the only story you'll hear about her. Just her parents. They hid him for 3 months because they saw he was a proper child. And they were, what? Not afraid of the king's commandments. I want to tell you a couple things about her before we go any further and we go back to the story. She had two qualities in her that was incredible at being able to be the mother and the woman that God would one day pick to be the mother of Moses. She first had the ability to be able to at any point in her life to realize, I've gone as far as I can go. If she'd have been in the New Testament, she would have been the lady with the issue of blood. She would have been one of the people in there that would have caught hold of something Jesus would have said. Maybe something like this. Doing all you know to do, ask whatever you will. She would have been that kind of woman. She would have been somebody that when she would have heard a statement like that, she would have believed it. She would have been able to catch hold of it. She would have been able to throw aside everything that she had once thought was sacred or believable or what everybody had told her, and she would have been able to cast it out and be able to trust something and to grab hold of something that most people do not have the ability to do. There's some of you in here, you've gotten places in your life because you were willing to cast out thoughts or cast out others' opinions or cast out even what you may have seemingly thought yourself and said, no, I'm not going to stop right there. Some of you went back to school. I always think of Brother Charles Walker, even as an older man, not 20 anymore, and goes back to school and gets his nursing degree and works in a camp. I think of people that at moments in their life came to me and said, I don't know if I can do this. It's not the matter that I walk around like I can do anything. I'm not talking about that attitude. I'm talking about when you have reached a point in your life when you don't know what to do and can't do anymore and you're out of strength and you're out of time and you're out of everything, that you have the ability inside of you to cast out, to be able to go further, to be able to believe beyond what is normal or what is normal for everybody else. When somebody looks at you and says, what are you doing? I'm believing for something big. Are you lost your mind? I may have lost my mind, but I'm casting out beyond what everybody else can do. That's why he was born, because when other mothers were taking their babies and putting it on the wagon and saying, I lost my child, she was hiding it in the closet and she was hiding it under the bed and she was hiding it and she's saying, I'm doing everything I know to do. I'm not going to just give up easily. I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to stop. I'm not just going to cave in. I'm going to go as far as I possibly can go. She has the ability that at the opportune moment when I know I can't do any, I can cast it. The second thing about her is that she doesn't have fear like most people. She doesn't walk around with what other people could do to her or think about her. Pharaoh is the most powerful man in the world. He commands the most enormous, largest army of history of that time. And here this one little woman goes totally against every decree. Soldiers marching up and down the streets each day looking for children, looking and listening to hear a noise, hear a cry coming out of a room where they can bolt in and go in and steal the child away. That this is what she lives under every single day. What would happen to her and her family? What would happen to her husband? What would happen if they came in and saw this little boy laying there 2 months old and they know you've been hiding this baby for, we're going to kill the whole family. But yet she sits there without fear. Not scared. Because I know a lot of people that cast out. But you know how their testimony goes. Well, I'm gonna do this. It probably won't work. But at least I'll go down with God. No, she doesn't have that attitude. She not only has the ability to cast out in a dream, in a hope, in what God's put in her heart, but she also has the ability to not sit there each day and think, what in the world am I doing? She has a resolve about her that says, I've made this choice, and I'm going to live with this choice. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I don't care if it makes good sense. I don't care what other people would say or not say. This is the way she lives her life. She is an incredible woman. She's an incredible person. If she'd been in the New Testament, she would have been an incredible Christian. Because she has the ability to grab hold and believe. She's no less than a Job. She's no less than an Abraham. She's no less. She's one of those handpicked by God that God can look down and say, that one won't cave. That one won't bend. That one won't give in. That one won't stop. That one won't quit trying. That one will extend everything they got to get there. So that when you go back now to Exodus, the second chapter, and we go to this second and third verse. And the woman became pregnant and bore a son, and when she saw that he was exceedingly beautiful, she hid him 3 months. I'm reading from the Amplified. And when she could no longer hide him, she took him to an ark, a basket made of bulrushes of papyrus, making it watertight, dabbing it with a bitumen and pitch. And when she put the child in it and laid it among the bulrushes by the brink of the river. 3 months you've done everything you know to do. There's three things I want to say, and this is the first one. Don't ever, if you're going to do anything for God, don't ever be overtaken by fear. If you're ever going to do anything for God, you're going to have to believe God is big enough. You're going to have to not let fear, because fear will always be the first thing that will attract itself to anything you decide to do that's out of the ordinary. The fear of what somebody's going to think. The fear of how it's going to work out. The fear of what could happen. The fear. And we go through it in our minds all the time. We go through the fear factor in our mind of what could happen, what might happen. Listen to me. If you're going to be one of these people that the Bible writes about, people of faith, people that they write about in Hebrews 11, then I'm going to tell you the one thing about them, that they did not allow fear to dominate or rule their actions of their normal life. It doesn't mean fear wasn't there. It doesn't mean that they just walked around and didn't have any feelings at all. It just means that they would not allow fear to cause them to do what they knew they had to do. When everybody else around them, whether it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and everybody else bows down, they still stand there. And when Nebuchadnezzar looks and says, listen, I'm going to give you one more shot, boys. And they're standing in front of this enormous king, in front of all of his crowd, and they're being centered out, and they're saying, one more shot. I'm going to give you one more shot. I'm going to tell the band to play it one more time, and then you got one opportunity. And to be able to look at a king and say, we're not slow to answer you. Just let it be known, O king, that you can probably kill us. But if God chooses, you can't. That's an incredible ability to be afraid, but to still stand. To still do what you know you have to do. And some of us in this room, that's where we're at in our lives. If I look at you and say, now look, don't worry about it. You'd look at me like, oh, you don't have no idea what I'm going through. I wouldn't embarrass you by saying that. But I will tell you this. I don't care how scary it looks. I don't care how hard it seems or how difficult the mountain seems to climb. If it's a mountain that God has called you to climb, if it's a place you've been called to go, if morally it's a place you're supposed to stand, if it's who you are and your character and who you are as living for Christ, then don't worry as much as you are about how you're going to get there. You just go ahead and you press in. When it gets fearful, you just pray. When you get scared, you pray. When you get scared, you walk faster. You do whatever you got to do. But do not allow fear to stop you from doing what you know you're supposed to do. Few people ever grasp that. I tell my kids all the time, our teenagers, and Jennifer when she was growing up, I'd tell them all the time. I said, shoot the moon. Always shoot for the moon. And they would look at me and someone would say, what if you don't make it? And I'd smile as big as I could and I said, listen to me. I said, most people you'll meet will never see what it looks like above treetop level. Most people you walk with will never know what it's like to see clouds. They'll never know what it's like. If you don't even make to the moon, most people will never see the height you'll go to. Nobody. Most people won't ever take the risk. It's too fearful. I'm just going to stay on the ground. I'm going to stay with what I know to do. What's comfortable for me. Number two. Let me hurry. The second thing about Jochebed, this lady, was not just that she was not overtaken by fear, but go with me to verses 4 through 6. And his sister Miriam stood some distance away to learn what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the bank. And she saw the ark among the rushes and sent them, her maids, to fetch it. And when she opened it, she saw the child. And behold, the baby cried. And she took pity on him and said, this is one of the Hebrew boys. Number two, you need to realize this about somebody if you're going to be a great person of God. You're going to have to reach moments in your life and you're just going to have to see what God can do. There are moments in your life where you're just going to have to see. It's not going to be showed to you. You're not going to see the destination. You're not going to see how it's going to play out. You're not going to know it. It's not going to have some dream in the middle of the night and show you the way it's going to work out. There are the greatest moments in your life when God can trust you at His greatest. Is when He can give you a destination. And as you're journeying along in that destination, it seems like every door closes. It seems like every window shuts. It seems like everything that could go wrong does go wrong. It seems like anybody that could turn against me has turned against me. It seems like everything is as black as it's ever going to be. It's at that moment I have to decide, I'm just going to see what God can do. I'm just going to stand here. That's why the Apostle Paul said it so well. That's all he knew to say. When he reached the end, he said, doing all you know to do, then stand. Then what after that, Paul? Stand. But I've got tired. Stand. But I don't see it no more. Stand. But I mean, you don't know what they're telling me now. Just stand. Why? Because the greatest breakthroughs in your life take place when you're not afraid to do what you're supposed to do. And then when you've reached the end of your rope, to just simply stand and just say, God, I've got nowhere else to go. I've got nowhere else to run. I've got no more strategies. I've got absolutely no plan to fixing this, but I know I'm supposed to be here and I'm standing here. Now, however you're going to do it, you do it. However you're going to make it work, you work. Can you imagine that mom sitting home? Can you imagine
What it took for her to take a 3-month-old baby that she loved. She's hid it as long as she could. She doesn't know what else to do. She's run out of options. She puts it into a basket. I know we make it look real pretty when we float it down, you know, and you watch that, the Prince of Egypt, and it's put in there and the basket's floating down along. That's not the way it worked. She goes into crocodile-infested waters. She goes into the only place she knows. She just finds a hole, water, where she knows, well, probably nobody will come over here. Nobody will mess with this. She wasn't planning on the Pharaoh daughter. She wasn't had a strategy. She just simply laid it among the reeds and she laid it there and she says, God, I don't know what else to do. And she goes home. She doesn't sit there and look at it all day like we would. We'd get a doctor's diagnosis and we'd go home and re-examine it and look up in a dictionary and get on the website and try to figure out what all it means and what all it says and what all the diagnosis is. And she just lets it go. She just says, God, I can't do anymore. I wouldn't matter if I knew what I could do anyway. It wouldn't matter if I knew what that word meant anyway. It wouldn't matter if I had the money anyway. It wouldn't matter. All I can do now is walk away. And I go home and I sit down in a quiet house. There's no baby crying anymore. There's no little child to hide anymore. I've given away everything I possibly can. I've cast everything I've got on God. I've got nothing to show for it. Everything is gone. All I can do is sit here and hope that something good can come out of when I let it go into God's hands. So many times in my life, I've sat on that lawnmower riding around my yard because I didn't have nowhere else to go. I don't even know if the grass needed to be mowed at those times. I just get on it and start driving. I didn't know what else to do. There's nobody to call. Nobody to fix it. And you just wait. And it seems the most helpless moments of your life when you're just waiting. When you're waiting those months and those days and it's like, God, I got nowhere else to go. But I'm just going to wait. Who knows what's going to happen when you cast it on God? Jochebed had two things for sure working on her side. At first, she was not going to let fear stop her. She didn't just walk out the door holding it by the leg one day and say, look, I'm tired of trying to hide this thing. Just take it. She didn't give up on it. And when she'd done all she knew to do, she didn't let fear dominate her life. And secondly, when she couldn't do no more, she had the ability to be able to lay it into God's hands and not try to fix it herself. She could have put it there and hung around and watched it like we would. We pray about something and go work on it right after we pray about it. She walks away. I can't imagine what that was like. Her husband and her sitting in a house. How do you explain that to each other? Don't you know, boy, like good marriages, we'd have looked at each other and you should have done something. If I'd have married a real man, well, if I'd have married a real woman, think of all the things you're fighting against at that moment, turning on each other. Anger. Why is God letting this happen? I wonder if the baby's still alive. I wonder if the basket sunk. You know, I did the best I could to make that basket where it was waterproof, but I mean, it's just mud. Just straw and mud. I don't know how long it'll stay together. You know, they say rain's coming. I may need to go back out there and get the basket back out of the... Because if the rain gets it, man, I'm telling you, she lets it go. She has to trust that the hands she lets it go in are bigger than her own. Honestly today, do you believe that the things you have to trust God with are bigger than your own? I just came back from a trip. It's always fun when I work with my little ones. Not for the kids' sake. The kids are fine. It's the parents. It's the most humorous thing. Watching those parents have to let the basket go. And even though that basket is surrounded by love, surrounded by safety, You call me every night. It's not as easy as it sounds, is it? We have a struggle letting go of little things, letting kids go on a youth trip or just go to school. I remember my son, the first day he went to school, I cried. First day Taylor went, the book bag was bigger than him. And we strapped that sucker on as tight as we could, and it was hitting him right about the back of his calves. And he walks in there with boys my size, and he's just a kindergartner, and he's trying to get through the door, and he ain't even big enough to open the door. He has to stand there and wait till somebody opens, and he slides through. And I was thinking to myself, I ought to walk down the hall. Anybody bumps him, anybody, I ought to pop them. Look, you know who this is? That's my son. You better be good. If you see this kid standing in the hall and needs help, you better help him. I'll come get you. It's hard for us to let go. Imagine if you had to really let go of something. You couldn't control it. It was just God or bust. That's where she is. Number three, incredible thing about this woman. God gets in the middle of it. God starts to work something out. God's got a plan bigger than she's got. The third thing you find out is this. Not only do you see what God can do, but you'll find your fit in life when you do this. Look at the person beside you and say, have you found your fit in life? You found what you were supposed to do in life. Let me tell you why most of us can't. Because we got too many things in our hands. We're trying to control too much stuff and trying to run too much stuff and trying to stay in charge of too much stuff. But what if everything was just taken out of your hands and the only thing that God put there was what fit? That's what He keeps promising. That's what Jesus keeps promising. If you'll lay down your life, I'll give you a life. Well, that doesn't make sense. If you'll lose your life, I'll show you how to find it. If you'll sow, I'll show you how to reap. And you always are going to reap more than you're going to sow. If you're willing to give just a handful of seed away, I'll bring a multitude of harvest. But until you grow past the first two, you can't experience the third. And some people a lot of times will see somebody and they'll think, I wish I was blessed like them. I mean, look at Pastor Lottie. I mean, he just gets blessed. Let me tell you something. I got to get through the first two steps before I get to the third. I don't just wake up in the morning and, oh, I'm blessed and highly flavored. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't happen like that. I have to first decide, am I going to let fear stop me from doing the next thing that I know I'm supposed to do? I deal with that every day of my life. Imagine if you had bills to pay. And I understand pastors that have to deal with this all the time. I have to struggle with this every day. We came from Houston and Scott and Donnie, two dear friends of mine, and they were here for years, and they're still trying to find a church. You know what their biggest complaint is? They're like, Pastor, they'll preach, but they don't go in depth into it. They'll kind of hit it, but you know they don't want to offend nobody. They don't really want to deal with it. They just want to kind of. And I said, Scott, think about it. There's eight churches on that one street. Those people show up in flip-flops and a coffee in one hand, and they're like, if I don't like you, I'll go down there next week. Those pastors feel like they're under pressure every single week. Most of those people aren't there for God. They're there just to be entertained. And if you aren't a good entertainer, I'll find me another entertainer. And if you make me mad, I'll move somewhere else. Can you imagine the pressure of that pastor having to pay the note on the church and be able to pay the electric bill and hope he doesn't offend nobody and doesn't run anybody off? I said, that's enormous pressure. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying I know what that feels like. Just think of the pressure. I'm fixing to build a building. What if you all decided to leave me? I got to get a job at Home Depot. Yeah, Brandon will have to go back to Virginia. Ryan will have to go back to something. I don't know what he's going back to. Truck driver. I got these guys' lives. They've come and they've trusted. And I've said, guys, we're going to do this. And most folks don't realize every day that you get up, it's like, okay, do I stand? Do I just do what I'm supposed to do? There's a fear factor you have to break. That I have to believe that if you leave me, five better is going to come. I have to believe that. I can't cower to it. And then secondly, there's times when I can't fix it. People's in hospitals and I've prayed and it don't seem like nothing's changing. Or maybe their marriage and I can't seem to fix it. I can't seem to do. And I have to say, God, I can't do this. This is yours. I can't carry this. I can't make them like each other. I can't make this work. I can't make this. Understand now, this is part of real life. I deal real life just like you do. None of us are immune to it. But if we could ever get past the first two, then I find where I fit. I find where I fit in life. Notice, go with me. And when she had opened it and saw the child, and behold, the babe wept, and she had compassion on it and said, this is one of the Hebrew children. Verse 7. Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter. Now notice, now Miriam, who's another daughter raised by this woman, Jochebed. You'll know another one later. His name is Aaron. She raised some pretty good kids. Miriam, the older sister, is sitting there watching the whole thing go on. And this is how God works. When the mother walked away and went home, God put it on the heart of the little girl, said, you stay here. She sits down right by the edge of the water and just watches the basket. All of a sudden, she hears noises coming from the other side. It's women coming and it's Pharaoh's daughter and, oh Lord, here we go. The maids are walking around the water and they're just walking along the edges and all of a sudden, Pharaoh's daughter sees this odd looking basket or whatever floating in the reeds and she says, bring it to me. When she opens it, it's this little baby. On cue, this baby cries. An angel reached down, pinched it on the leg. Cry now, Moses. And when it cries, something pricks her heart. She's not able to have children. She doesn't have children. And seeing this little baby laying there, this little 3-month-old chubby-cheeked little baby laying there crying, it just pricks her heart and she picks it up. I don't care who you are, once you pick that thing up, it's yours. She picks it up and holds it to make it stop crying. And on cue, Miriam runs to her and says, ma'am, listen. And then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call to see thee a nurse of the Hebrew women that they shall may nurse the child for you? I got this little baby. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And here's how God works. When we're willing to let go of things, so many times people say, how did you get here? How did this happen? I'm going to tell you something. I have no idea. I'm going to just go ahead and just let you know. I don't know how I got to here in my life. I sure won't know how I'm going to get to there. I just know this, that if I don't let fear stop me, and if I can cast things on God, and let them rest there and stay there. God has the ability to find the fit for me. Of all the towns in the world, he said, Forest, Mississippi fits you. There's guys that like to ride motorcycles. There's people that like to do there's people there that's going to like you. They're sports fanatics. There's people there that like to do hunting and fishing. And man, you're going to meet people that's got fishing boats. You don't even have to have a fishing boat. They own fishing boats. You just got to get to Forest, Tim. Okay, God. Miriam's not dumb. She runs home to her mom. Her mom and dad are sitting there. All of a sudden, somebody busts through the door. Miriam looks at her and says, "You want a job?" "What do you mean, do I want a job? Come quick! I need to show you something." And while they're running back to the water, she's explaining to her, "Mom, I was there. Pharaoh's daughter picked this baby up. She needs a nurse to take care of it. I told her I'd go find one." Duh. "I knew the perfect nurse for this baby." So now standing in front of Pharaoh's daughter, an Egyptian who was supposed to kill the baby, she's standing in front of this woman, and Pharaoh's daughter says to her, still, I get it just bothers me they never use her name. It's amazing how, and I don't know if God does that in, I guess He just does it because of her character. She says, Pharaoh's daughter says to her, could have said it said to Jochebed. But it does, it just says, says to her, because her fit is not her name. Her fit is not her level of importance. Her fit is not who she is in society. Her fit is who she's going to be in time. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. Verse 9. And Pharaoh's daughter said to Jochebed, take this child away and nurse it for me. And I will give you thy wages. I'm going to pay you to raise this child for me. Now, do you think you could have figured that out? You think you and all your strategy could have went and knocked on Pharaoh's daughter's door and said, hey, look, I got a plan. Would you work with me? I tell you what, you get to keep the baby, but I get to nurse it and we don't have to kill it. It never would have went over. She had to let it go. She had to lay it in the water. She had to trust God. Miriam had to stand by the bank. Everything had to happen just the way God had it planned. Look at the person beside you and say, God can outthink you. If you don't ever know anything in life, you better realize God can out. If you're serving a God that only thinks as good as you do, we're all in trouble. We are all sunk. I serve a God that knows the end from the beginning. He knows everybody's heart. He knows everybody to talk to. He knows how to say it. He knows how to do it. He knows how to work it out. Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman, took the child and nursed it. I hear so many people all the time say, I don't know what I'm supposed to be. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'll give you a quick strategy. First, don't live your life afraid. You'll never find what you're born to do if you're going to live your life afraid. You'll have to challenge yourself to do things that are in your heart that your mind don't think it can happen. You'll have to overcome fear. Secondly, in your life, if it's a God thing, if it's a big dream that God's put in you, I don't care how big it is to you, you'll have to reach a point in your life where you know you can't do it. What's some of the most amazing things, these people that go back to school and things, and I use them as an example. Instinctively, they'll reach a point in their life, in their schooling. They'll say, oh, we're doing good in this, I'm doing good. But it's instinct. I've never had not one that hasn't come to me at some point in their schooling, at some point in this, and say, Pastor, you got to pray. Why? Because I've already failed this test once, or this exam is so important, or this is, and I know I can't do it, and I know, and I'm like, all right, now we're fixing to give God the glory. Because you done reached a point in your life now where the dream is bigger than you are. And now your mind is run out, and your physical ability is run out. And it's like, Pastor, I don't think I can pass this thing. I don't think I can do this. Let's pray. Why? Because at those moments when I can cast everything on Him, then the miracles begin to take place. And finally, at those moments, I find my fit. I find where I belong. I find where I was designed to be. I don't ever get up any morning and think, well, I wonder if I'm supposed to pastor at Forest. I've done found the fit. Why? Because I've walked through the steps. Some of you in this room today, You're still letting fear stop you. There's a kid in here right now. You could go to college. You could do good. But you know what's causing you the problem? Fear. And because of fear, you keep sabotaging your own grades. You keep telling yourself you can't do it. And when you make a bad grade because you didn't study hard enough and you didn't do it, that gives you the excuse to say, I can't do it. I just need to find me a husband or a wife. And I just need, as soon as I get out of high school, get married and just go on. That has nothing to do with a dream in your heart. But it's what you're settling for. I could go on and on as God's speaking to me right now. No need to. You know who you are in this room this morning if fear. The fear of stepping out. The fear of believing for something great. The fear of not settling is grabbing a hold of you. You've got to shake it off. But Brother Lott, I'm not sure I can do it. I'll go ahead and answer this for you. You can't. Let's just go ahead and get that. You can't. Maybe a year from now, maybe 6 months from now, but you're going to reach a point in that relationship, working with that child or in that class or whatever, that you just realize, I can't do it. That's when you're going to have to cast all of it on God. When I got saved years ago, I thought I gave God all my heart. Anybody else do that? You got saved and thought you gave God all your heart? And then you got to your 12-year-old. When I was 12, then I thought I gave God all my heart. I got 16, started driving. I was man now. Gave God all my heart then. I knew more. Got 20, got out on my own, started making a living. Boy, I knew now. I know what it is to give your life to God. Can I tell you something? I'm 44 years old. Raising 3 kids, a wife, house, church. And I think I still am learning what it is to give all to God. I think it's just the next step that I have to make. That's the next place I'm giving all to God. For some of you in this room right now, you got to give all. What you know right now is all. You got to give it. And watch God do something that nobody else can do. Find the fit for your life. Whether you're a Daniel, a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, a Jochebed. Whether you're a Peter or a Paul. Whether you're a Tim Lott. God's got the perfect fit for what you were designed to do. But you're going to have to walk it out. Will you stand?